Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled, Biden's Oil Industry Comments May Not Be Gold Nugget Trump Is Looking For. Analysis by Amber Phillips, Washington Post. Before the debate, President Donald Trump said his advisors urged him to interrupt less and let Joe Biden talk more, the better to let the Democratic nominee slip up. Toward the end of the debate, Trump may have gotten what he wanted. A Biden comment about closing down the oil industry that probably won't play well in states up for grabs in November, such as Texas and Pennsylvania. But there's also evidence that Trump is the candidate on the defensive when it comes to public opinion and climate change. Here's what happened. Trump, would you close down the oil industry? Biden, yes, I would transition. Trump, that is a big statement. Biden, that is a big statement. Trump, why would you do that? Biden, because the oil industry pollutes significantly. Because it has to be replaced by renewable energy over time. Over time. And I'd stop giving to the oil industry. I'd stop giving them federal subsidies. Trump, basically what he is saying is he's going to destroy the oil industry. Will you remember that, Texas? Will you remember that, Pennsylvania? Oklahoma? Biden, he takes everything out of context. But the point is, we have to move toward a net zero emissions. The first place to do that by the year 2035 is in energy production. By 2050, totally. Biden's yes answer to closing down the oil industry was potentially serious enough for him to try to clarify his remarks to reporters later at the airport. He said he would stop giving money to the oil industry rather than close it down entirely. We're not going to get rid of fossil fuels. We're going to get rid of subsidies for fossil fuels. The above statement might still be used as an attack by Trump, who could distort it to claim Biden is open to finding ways to shutter one of the most powerful industries in America. But Trump doesn't have to try to work with just Biden's second statement. Biden initially answered in the affirmative when asked if he would close the oil industry, even if he tried to clarify it later and stressed that none of his changes would happen right away. The problem for Biden is that he is running against someone ready and willing to pounce on any perceived mistake, see Hillary Clinton's emails, and amplify them as loudly as possible, even if or when it gets away from the facts. It calls to mind how, at a Democratic presidential debate, Biden said, no new fracturing. It might be a popular thing to say in a Democratic primary, but not in a general election, where fracturing is a significant employer in states such as Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Texas. His campaign immediately clarified afterward that he wants no new fracturing permits on public lands, a position that would let most fracturing continue. I am not banning fracturing, Biden felt the need to say in Pittsburgh months later in September. To this day, even at this final debate, Trump seizes on that one line from that one March debate to inaccurately describe Biden's position. He was against fracturing. He said it, Trump claimed Thursday night. Now, Trump may have something stronger to work with. Still, Biden saying he would close down the oil industry in a national presidential debate may not be the gold nugget Trump is looking for. As the Post's climate team reports, fossil fuels that Biden wants to stop giving federal subsidies to are a major contributor of climate change. Americans' anxieties about climate change are high. Wildfires, hurricanes, floods, derechos in Iowa are all giving more attention to scientists' warnings that in about a decade without action, the planet will irreversibly be catastrophically damaged. A 2019 Washington Post and Kaiser Family Foundation poll found that two-thirds of Americans say Trump is doing too little on climate change, and about half said action is urgently needed in the next decade. That's consistent with what Biden regularly sells. Global warming is an existential threat to humanity, he said Thursday. We have a moral obligation to do with it. And we're told by all the leading scientists in the world, we don't have much time. America's climate concerns have continued throughout the pandemic. An October Pew Research Center survey found that 68% of voters said climate change is a very or somewhat important factor in their decision on who to vote for. Perhaps even more so than any other campaign issue, the contrast between Biden and Trump on climate change is stark. Biden has put together a climate plan to transition America to clean energy by 2050. Trump has been one of the most anti-climate change presidents ever, describing it as a hoax and putting out a major international agreement to lower emissions. Some Republican strategists have been worrying in recent years that their party could lose voters if they don't turn around on this issue quickly. But both candidates are insulated somewhat by partisanship. That Pew survey found climate change ranks as very important for 68% of Biden voters. It ranks last in importance for most Trump voters. To the extent Trump bashes Biden on his oil comments, he may just be speaking to his own supporters already. And the same goes for Biden as he talks about dealing with climate change. Biden's comments could reverberate below him, though. A vulnerable House Democrat, Kendra Horn in Oklahoma, immediately distanced herself from Biden on this. Biden handed Trump an opening in Thursday's debate to raise doubts about the Democratic in swing states, especially Pennsylvania, which strategists on both sides see as the potential tipping state this November. As Democrats learned in 2016, margins matter. But public opinion is also on Biden's side on the larger question of dealing aggressively with climate change. And then there's the fact that no issue, not even the economy, has been able to rise above the coronavirus pandemic and Trump's handling of it. This article is entitled, Trump Intensifies Fracturing Assault on Biden in Pennsylvania, by Mark Levy, Associated Press. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. In a late gambit to win the battleground state of Pennsylvania, President Donald Trump and his GOP allies have intensified attacks on Joe Biden over fracturing, hoping to drive a wedge between the former vice president and the white working-class voters tied to the state's booming natural gas industry. That assault is playing out in a barrage of TV ads and conservative and right-wing websites and is repeated at every Trump rally in the state. It relies on a series of confusing statements from the former vice president, including remarks on the oil industry from last week's debate, to claim he intends to ban or end natural gas extraction, although that is not the Democrats' official position. Trump's fracturing play comes as polls show the president is struggling to overtake Biden in Pennsylvania and in need of a boost from the rural and ex-urban white voters who helped him to a narrow victory in Pennsylvania in 2016. It also shoots to snap the tightrope that Biden is walking between the Democrat Party's left wing, which is hostile to fossil fuels, and its bedrock blue-collar union base that is building an expanding network of gas pipelines, power plants, and processing facilities in Pennsylvania. Biden's climate change plan aims to reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050 and does not involve banning fracturing, the process formerly named hydraulic fracturing, that along with horizontal drilling made the United States an oil and gas superpower over the last decade. He argues that net zero threshold can be achieved by helping eliminate emissions from natural gas infrastructure while redirecting federal subsidies for oil and gas to cleaner energies. I do rule out banning fracturing because we need other industries to transition to get to ultimately a complete zero emissions, Biden said in Thursday night's debate. For his part, Trump often ridicules the science behind increasingly urgent warnings for immediate action to stave off the worst of climate damage by cutting fossil fuel emissions. But Trump's attacks routinely cite various Biden statements, several made during the Democratic primary campaign, to muddy that position. In one, Biden told a town hall questioner last year, "We're going to end fossil fuel." Biden's running mate, California Senator Kamala Harris, meanwhile endorsed a ban during her own bid for the Democratic presidential nomination. At a recent Trump's rally in Erie, Pennsylvania, the president showed the crowd a video of various Biden comments on fracturing in a bid to portray Biden as opposed to the process. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, October 19th, 2020. This is the oil page. This article is entitled, "Biden's Clean Grid Would Choke Gas," by Will Wade, Gerson Freitas Jr., and Jennifer A. DeLuey, Bloomberg. During a town hall meeting Thursday, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden again assured shale producers that he wouldn't ban hydraulic fracturing if elected. Then, in virtually the same breath, he touted his $2 trillion clean energy plan, which aims to edge natural gas out of the power mix within 15 years. The former vice president's efforts to walk a tightrope on gas reflect the fossil fuel's precarious place in the community. For now, it's an essential part of American life. Biden has been careful not to make an enemy of the industry, especially in the key battleground state of Pennsylvania, home to the largest U.S. shale gas field. His policies may even, in the short term, support the gas market. But in the long run, the fuel may prove economically and environmentally untenable within the power sector, a key market for producers. Biden's climate plan would only accelerate that outcome, with massive investments in wind, solar, and battery storage giving those energy sources a leg up. And his goal of a carbon-neutral grid would severely curb, if not destroy, gas's share of the pie in favor of cheaper, cleaner renewables. Decarbonization isn't a debate. It's a fossil fuel death sentence, said Kevin Book, managing director of Clearview Energy Partners. It means the resource is going off the grid. That is the inevitable implication. Gas, like coal a decade ago, is facing economic headwinds. While it's still the nation's dominant fuel source, it's less competitive against renewables than it used to be. Solar and wind are now cheaper than gas-fired power in two-thirds of the world, according to Bloomberg NEF. In the U.S., top wind projects already produce electricity for less than natural gas, and by 2030, renewables are expected to be cheaper on average than the fossil fuel, BNEF said in an April report. The right combination of federal policies could easily push gas out of the power mix by 2035 or earlier. This transition is going to happen more quickly than people thought, just as the coal transition has happened faster than people thought it would, said John Coquitt, the climate policy director at the Sierra Club. To be sure, gas may reap some benefits from a Biden presidency in the near term. Through his proposal to limit drilling on federal lands, could trim production, tighter supplies could lift prices, potentially making gas exports more profitable. Similarly, a thaw in U.S.-China relations could give exporters greater access to a major world market. But higher prices would have the opposite effect in the power sector, where cost is key. Gas-fired electricity generation is already expected to fall 5.7% this winter compared to last year, simply because gas prices are higher this season, according to Energy Information Administration projections. And that's despite forecasts for a colder winter, which would increase electricity demand. The economics put gas in a roughly similar position as coal in the years before President Barack Obama took office. In coal's case, Obama hastened its decline by imposing new regulations that made coal plants more costly to operate, notably the 2012 mercury and air toxic standards that limited toxic emissions from plants, and the 2015 Clean Power Plan that curbed carbon emissions. A Biden administration could take a similar tack, imposing new and more stringent limits on greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. He could also reinstate and possibly strengthen Obama-era rules curbing methane leaks from gas infrastructure, which were repealed by President Donald Trump. Both have the potential to drive up the cost of gas-fired electricity without banning the fuel. Most analysts agree that Biden wouldn't explicitly go after the gas industry in the same way that Obama attacked the coal sector. Instead, Biden's clean energy policies would make it harder for gas to compete with wind, solar, and other renewables. You might be able to adopt policies that at least give them a theoretical chance to survive, even if they're going to make it much harder for them to survive, said David Spence, a professor at the University of Texas School of Law. For now, there isn't much pressure to close the gas plants already in service. Existing gas plants will have a role to play for a while, said Mark Dyson, a principal at the Rocky Mountain Institute. They're keeping the lights on while we build as much wind and solar as we can. And Biden's proposal leaves the door open for utilities to continue using gas plants that are fitted with carbon capture systems that trap emissions, said Jonathan Elkind, senior research scholar at Columbia University Center on Global Energy Policy. In Thursday's town hall, Biden stressed the importance of embracing new technologies, including carbon capture, as a way to achieve a carbon-free electricity sector while still using some natural gas. Still, utilities might not want to make that kind of investment when the price of renewables continues to fall. A lot of the path to net zero by 2035 for power will come from energy efficiency gains, a lot from renewables, and that will squeeze out fossil fuels eventually, said Katie Bays, an analyst with Sandhill Strategy in Washington. Already, local jurisdictions are moving away from gas in pursuit of their own climate goals. Cities across California have moved to ban natural gas use in homes, while New York blocked a proposed $1 billion pipeline that Governor Andrew Cuomo opposition by environmental groups even drove Dominion Energy Inc. to cancel a major pipeline project before selling most of its gas operations in July. Utilities are also preparing for a gasless future. Besides building renewables, power giants Net Era Energy Inc. and Entenergy Corp. are among companies investing in gas turbines that can transition to running on 100% renewable hydrogen. Still, many doubt whether it's even possible to achieve a carbon-free power grid in 15 years, which is a more ambitious goal than California and New York have set for themselves. Transforming the electric grid would be both costly and complicated, and analysts caution against taking the plan too literally. To pay for it, Biden has proposed an increase in the corporate income tax rate to 28% from 21%, as well as using stimulus money. But that would require congressional approval, a tall order if Republicans retain control of the Senate. Nevertheless, the push for decarbonization reflected in the Biden plan presents a real long-term threat to natural gas as a source of electricity. There would be a huge downside risk for gas demand, said Carlos Torres Diaz, head of gas and power market research at Rystad Energy AS in Oslo. Even if we don't get to zero. This article is entitled, Big Oil Shouldn't Worry About Biden. Commentary by Liam Denning, Bloomberg Opinion. Oil executives are just like you and me. They worry about the election. A Biden administration would absolutely kill our industry. Such comments from oil and gas chiefs featured in the Dallas Fed's latest sector survey. It is received wisdom that if elected, president alongside a few more Democratic senators, an administration led by Joe Biden would sacrifice the industry on the altar of the Green New Deal. After all, Biden says one thing, but he's secretly just Bernie with better hair and teeth, right? Actually, any oil and gas executive with an eye on the decade ahead, rather than their next quarter, has good reason to hope Biden wins. Washington's battle over replacing the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court gets to the heart of why. First, though, a gentle nudge for the American oil business towards self-reflection. Commanding 14% of the S&P 500 when Barack Obama was first sworn in as president, energy's weighting had sunk to about half that when President Donald Trump took his oath. Today, it's close to being a rounding error. This industry drilled itself into a ditch, regardless of who sat in the Oval Office. Unlike oil and gas investors, the CEOs who are frequently rewarded for growth at all costs and insulated from sometimes catastrophic overreach have mostly done just swimmingly. One reason Trump's energy dominance agenda didn't halt the long decline is that its Soviet tractor quota approach merely encouraged the industry's worst self-harming impulses. Elsewhere in that Dallas Fed survey, participants were asked for their primary goals over the next 6 months. The top two answers? Maintain or grow production. Amid a historic oil glut with balance sheets that look like they've been fracked themselves, this industry could use a little less dominance and a lot more discipline. Keep this in mind when Biden is decried as the sector's nemesis. Which brings us to the election and that Supreme Court seat. Americans who think climate change either isn't real or is overblown are in a small and shrinking minority. There is, of course, a partisan divide, with Democrats overwhelmingly accepting climate change as a real threat. Still, a majority of Republicans also believe climate change is happening, though only a minority blame human activities, and that carbon emissions should be regulated as a pollutant. Moreover, millennial and Gen Z Republicans show more concern about climate change and support for renewable energy than the elder cohort. Republican leadership, however, is of a different mind. This starts at the top, with a president who has long expressed doubt climate change is real and muses aloud on wind turbines causing cancer. It is emblematic of a party that long since gave up on late Senator John McCain's carbon cap and trade proposals in 2008, and this year adopted a policy platform consisting of little more than an arrow pointing at Trump with the slogan, "What he said." Gestures made toward the issue are for appearance's sake. In his recent debate with Senator Kamala Harris, Vice President Mike Pence deployed the stunningly beige phrase, "The climate is changing." But there simply is no consequential policy debate about climate change occurring within the GOP. This has become the firewall for fossil fuels against meaningful climate policy as the disconnect with public opinion widens, with the Republican-controlled Senate a critical defense. Fossil fuel production is relatively concentrated within the U.S. 80% of it comes from just 9 states, according to Clearview Energy Partners, a Washington-based analysis firm. And while 18 senators might not seem like much, as Clearview points out, they are significant when the filibuster rule prevents passage of legislation without 60 votes. Fossil fuel production accounts for more than 1% of GDP in a further 7 states, and for some smaller proportion in many more. All this, plus partisan cohesion regardless of direct fossil fuel exposure, has made pulling together a blocking minority eminently doable. But the filibuster hangs by a thread, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's push to seat Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court, cementing a 6-3 right-wing majority, could trigger its demise altogether. Several Democratic presidential candidates called explicitly for the end of the filibuster on the campaign trail, often linking it directly to addressing climate change. Biden didn't, and it seems doubtful he would push a Democratic Senate in this direction over climate policy. What could change that? How about a naked power play by an outgoing president and Senate to tilt the least democratic branch of government their way for a generation, threatening things that probably would constitute a tipping point even for Biden? The Affordable Care Act, access to abortion, voting rights. For all its complexities, there is a simple way to think about what happens on November 3rd. If Trump loses, that all the Republican never-Trumpers will be able to say, "Told you so." If Biden loses, then progressives will say the same thing to Democratic leadership. For the oil and gas industry, A Trump loss likely means the Senate flips too. Yet with Biden in the White House and the incumbent Democratic leadership still mostly in charge, the chances of a sweeping AOC-style Green New Deal would be diminished. Climate change measures would still be enacted in some form, not least as part of a post-COVID stimulus effort, but likely more along the lines of an actual transition rather than abrupt disruption. And adult management of the COVID-19 crisis and a large economic stimulus, along with tighter restrictions on fracturing on federal land and methane emissions, could support oil and gas prices from both the demand and supply side, at least in the short term. A Trump win, with Republicans maintaining their slender grip on the Senate, might seem preferable to oil and gas CEOs. This is short-sighted. The Green New Deal is itself a reaction to decades of obstruction by oil and gas interests and their Republican allies against even incremental measures to address climate change. As the clock ticks by and the wildfires and hurricanes intensify, so climate change's mindshare among Americans grows, and so does frustration with inaction. If the industry's strategy to deal with this is simply to retreat even further into a fortress built on the quirks of the U.S. political system, then it had best hope the other side, post-Biden and with gloves discarded utterly, never gains power and abolishes those quirks. This is the logic of the raw power politics revealed so brazenly in the Republican push for Barrett just 4 years after stonewalling Merrick Garland on spurious grounds, now being ignored. Not to mention rampant voter suppression, with oil capital Houston an epicenter in this cycle. Indeed, such defensive thinking is implicit in McConnell's relentless focus on judicial appointments. The court packing's already happened, folks, rather than actual legislating. Confident parties fight to win power and use it. Fearful parties make a grab for power and obsess over how to keep it. The industry faces a choice between getting on board with a smoother transition, with more emphasis on market-based solutions, or keeping with Republicans' maximalist but minority position until political fortunes inevitably change, at which point mandates like California's gasoline carbon will drop like bricks. The first option entails risk management. The second is a gamble with lengthening odds. Spencer Dale, chief economist at BP, noted the risk for the industry in a recent presentation about future energy demand. If the required reductions in carbon emissions cannot be met through energy efficiency or fuel switching, the only other way they can be achieved in this scenario is via widespread energy rationing. That is, policies which stop or restrict energy using outputs or activities, generating significant economic costs and disruption. Oil majors such as BP find it easier, though not easy, to take a longer view. The E&P companies active in shale are more concerned with surviving the next 12 months. Even so, the larger ones should also have an interest in putting the industry on a more sustainable footing, not at least because the costs of, say, doing the right thing on methane emissions would force many marginal competitors to consolidate or disappear. This is the lesson of energy's decline into index obscurity. Even with so much extraneous help, rising demand, OPEC Plus reinstated Iran sanctions, zero interest rates, free flaring in Texas, Trump's regulatory rollback, unpriced carbon emissions, the industry has foundered. What exactly is required to make it work? A Supreme Court ruling that everyone must own two SUVs? Whether they realize it or not, those decrying the prospect of a Biden administration forcing the fossil fuels business to finally internalize the cost of climate change are implicitly admitting this business cannot survive without massive subsidies. And one suspects the overlap between them and those folks who dismiss renewables with tired stuff, like, but Solyndra is reasonably extensive. Similarly, if the industry only sees a future for itself via its political allies setting judges against majority opinion and making energy just another front in the culture wars, then it has lost the moral authority to help shape the inevitable transition. The line linking decades of discrediting scientific findings on climate as elitist oppression and our current moment in which a sick president mocks masking against a deadly disease may be a dotted one, but it is there. Rather than a dead end for the industry, Biden represents an off-ramp.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, October 25th, 2020. Letters to the Editor. City has long way to go on social issues. I attended the Midland ISD School Board meeting on October 20th, and after 52 years as a resident of Midland, I never knew how far apart this city was on the subject of the name change of Robert E. Lee High School. I was quite disturbed by this. 23 people spoke, including myself. 13 were for the complete name change, and 10 wanted to keep the name or use the acronym LEE. The 13 people were a diverse group, while the 10 were all white. What disturbs me the most was the mocking of the hurt and pain by most of the 10 all-white proponents of the Lee name toward the former Lee students of color, who spoke of their experiences at Robert E. Lee High School as if it did not exist. I did not attend Lee High School, and let it be known when I began to speak. I have known for decades of problems at LHS for people of color. Midland still has a long way to go when it comes to social issues, which is really sad, as communities in this country are getting in right and coming to their senses, while Midland refuses to open its eyes and tear down this Berlin Wall around it. The school board made the right decision to reject the Citizens Committee's recommendation of the LEE acronym and decide on Legacy High School and keep the Rebels mascot and the colors maroon and white. Now, Midland can move on from this and keep up with the rest of the country. But to the proponents of the name Lee, there is a place in Georgia called Stone Mountain. I suggest, as fans of the name Robert E. Lee, that's the place for you. Major Houston. Election Letters. Carrasco will be strong voice on MC Board. It is time for no new leadership on the Midland College Board of Trustees. Mr. Will Green has served admirably for 24 years, but he is out of touch with the programs the college offers and current community needs. Adrian Carrasco is passionate about Midland College. He will be a strong and enthusiastic voice on the board to lead the college into the future. He is not tied to community special interest groups. He will represent all Midlanders and support higher education for our children and grandchildren. Please vote for Adrian Carrasco. Ann Smith. Booker is compassionate, listens to all points of view. Michael Booker is compassionate and willing to listen to others. He is selfless and realizes the importance of hearing all points of view rather than leaning on his own opinions. Michael sees the need to reach all kids, not just those who look like him. He feels a great need to be a voice for the benefit of the future generations. I know Michael will be an asset to the Midland ISD Board of Trustees in District 1. He will be the difference that is needed to improve the culture for the teachers, the students, and the parents, while maintaining fiscal responsibility that will benefit taxpayers. The constituents will finally be heard, and they will have ample opportunities to meet face-to-face with him. Michael Booker has my vote for District 1 Board of Trustees. Olympia Carrasco. Booker is a dedicated, strong leader. I have known Michael Booker for many years. I had the honor of working with him at Midland County Sheriff's Office. Michael was dedicated and respected while he served our community as MCSO. He is a team player. Mr. Booker also served our great nation by selflessly serving in the United States Armed Services. Can't think of a better way to show someone's dedication and strong leadership than both his time served in the military and working for our community at Midland County Sheriff's Office. I feel confident that Michael Booker will have his constituents' backs and will listen to them and make decisions based on the voices in his district. We need someone like Michael on our school board. Michael is an advocate for children, first starting at home with his children and continuing in our community by volunteering his time in youth sports while coaching and refereeing. He leads by example and integrity. If you want someone on the school board that will listen and reflect on what our teachers and students need to help better our children's education and future, vote Michael Booker for District 1 School Board. MCSO Sergeant Chris Evans. Davis is dedicated, strives to be better. I've known Rachel Davis for 2 years. We became friends when we joined an organization as part of a local women's Shriners International. Rachel has been deeply involved with the Shriners and is always willing to help in any way. There have been several fundraisers that we have worked on together, and Rachel is extremely organized, very efficient, and a very positive person to work with. She went to our Shriners Hospital when she was little and always wanted to give back to the people that helped her. In the 2 years she has been involved with our organization, she has been very committed to helping in any way that she can. She is an extremely generous and giving person with a love to make the world a better place. I believe Rachel would be a tremendous asset to anything she is involved with. She is very dedicated and an honorable lady and strives to be a better person for her community in all she does. Rachel would be a wonderful asset to your school board. Please vote for Rachel Davis for MISD School Board, District 2. Shelley Bunnell. Davis fights for all MISD students. I've known Rachel Davis for 3 years now. I've been with Scarborough Elementary PTA for the last 7 years and will be the PTA president for the 2021 school year. Rachel is an amazing mother of two, and everything she does is for them. She is caring and generous to any child she comes across. She fights for not just the kids that go to Scarborough, but for all kids that are in MISD. Rachel is very truthful and has quickly become one of my best friends and someone I can always count on. She will do whatever she can to make sure that kids get the best education. She started a program called Little Wranglers, and it was amazing. My kids loved it. She also put together a clay shoot as a fundraiser for Scarborough Elementary, which was a huge success. She is very involved with a few different organizations where she is respected and loved. Rachel is a very honest person and tells it like it is. I'm very glad that I get to call her my friend, and I know if she is elected for District 2, she will do great things. Jamie Rich. Davis has shown great leadership skills. I am the past potentate of Suez Temple in San Angelo. I am writing to recommend Rachel Davis for the position on your school board. I have known and worked with her for the past 2 years. Rachel has been an active participant in our organization and has shown great leadership skills. I have nothing but positive things to say about her. Rachel is a team player and is very easy to get along with. There is no doubt in my mind that Rachel would be an excellent addition to your school board. Please vote for Rachel Davis for MISD School Board, District 2. Don Bunnell. Joyner has leadership qualities to serve. I was thrilled when I saw that Katie Wallace Joyner was running for the MISD School Board. She was a student on the yearbook staff at Midland High for 2 years while I was advisor. During her senior year, Katie served as sports editor, and I saw firsthand her leadership qualities and communication skills. She went on to earn a degree in media from UT and was a professional project manager for 4 years. She returned to Midland in 2013, and I would see Katie at high school and football games or at a restaurant with teens and her young daughters. She mentored high school students during her involvement in Young Life, already demonstrating her commitment to our youth. Katie is a third-generation Midlander who has served charities that support YMCA, Bynum School, Midland Children's Rehab Center, and Young Life. She wants to give back to the community as the District 4 representative to ensure that our children and grandchildren receive a quality education, just as she did. Her leadership qualities and interpersonal skills make her more than qualified to serve. Although I am not able to vote for Katie, I hope those of you that live in District 4 will. Jill Halbert Russell. Vargas will do what is right for teachers, students. In getting to know Steve Vargas and having heard conversations about the issues that I saw as not only a teacher within MISD, a parent of a special needs child, and Midland taxpayer, I know that what the MISD school board needs is this man. He is a man of faith, former military, and a loving husband and father. He has worked hard for everything he has and has always stood up for what is right, no matter the cost. Steve Vargas is for the teachers of Midland ISD, and his core focus is fighting for every student of every ability to receive the top-notch schooling that all the students deserve. He is eager to listen and stand with parents who want what is best for their children and genuinely cares for all children. You can see it in the way he smiles as he interacts with children of all ages, truly listening to them and letting them know that they are a true gift from God. Every child is a gift, and I am confident that Steve Vargas is the right man to do what is right for the teachers and the students of MISD. Christine Waldell Coulter. Joyner has had long lifelong interest in children. Katie Wallace Joyner first demonstrated her interest in children and education when she was still a child herself, orchestrating with friends summer day camps for neighborhood children, including mine. I've watched as she grew into an adult who works with local teenagers through Young Life and with young children through our church. Now she offers her service to Midland children by running for a place in the Midland ISD school board. I believe Katie has both the heart and the energy to work for what's best for our children and our town. I urge Midlanders to cast their ballots for Katie in early voting through Friday or on Election Day, November 3rd.
Hello, this is Cindy reading opinion from the Odessa American for Sunday, October 25th. Letters to the Editor. Growth must have a solid foundation. Luke Wallace, Odessa. As a longtime resident of District 1, I write this letter in support of Mark Mata, a candidate for Odessa City Council District 1. I know Mark to be a strong family man, a hard worker, and a man of faith. I know Mark to be a strong proponent of growth in not only our district, but our city as well. Mark is financially fiscal and will work to not only stretch our tax dollars, but work to not raise our already high tax rates. He will strive to build our infrastructure and continue the work on our city's roads that finally begun. Mark has spoke of the need for another grocery store on the south side and other visions he has for our city, such as bringing growth to the Ector County side, not just growth from Midland County East. Imagine if all that tax revenue was coming into Ector County. Mark is an experienced salesman who knows you don't have to give everything away to make a sale. Local GOP wants open government. CR Dick Salisbury, Odessa, writes, in a recent letter to the editor entitled Odessans Beware on City Council Races, Kirk Edwards made some observations that need clarification. What the Ector County Republican Party is and does seem to have been insufficiently and incorrectly communicated to many, if not most, voters. The Ector County Republican Party is a formal organization that is made up of many Ector County residents. It consists of the county Republican chair, who is elected countywide, and of numerous precinct chairs, all of whom are respected members of our community. The Texas Election Code dictates this organizational structure for both the Republican and Democrat parties in our state. This elected leadership, composed of friends and neighbors, volunteer their time and resources to be the blue-collar workhorses of the county, state, and national Republican Party. Regular meetings are held to do the required business of the party, such as interviewing candidates for all elected positions, getting out the vote, registering new voters, and many other jobs that would be left undone without these volunteers. I have been involved for many years as a Republican precinct chair and other positions, as these all require much effort in maintaining a Republican form of government, and these are duties that we can ill afford to leave undone. Mr. Edwards claimed that the Ector County Republican Party would never endorse or help Landgraf or Seliger in the past. This simply is not true. I served as the treasurer for Representative Landgraf's first campaign. I also supported Senator Seliger for many years until his voting record became more liberal than what I am comfortable with. Both men can count many of their supporters, past and present, among the members of our county party leadership. And our party has spent resources campaigning to get both men elected, including support for Representative Landgraf, in this very election. A lack of transparency by current city leaders has led to a lawsuit by the OA and a resultant decision of these same city officials to spend more of our tax dollars, challenging the court's recent ruling. As most of the voters in Ector County want open, honest, and responsible governing, these moves, among others, by the city, current, elected officials, caused great consternation and led me and my fellow Republican leaders to endorse these challengers, who are capable, but just as important, cherish open, transparent governance. A major claim in not just Mr. Edwards' letter, but several others have asserted that these new candidates are against promoting and growing the city and our whole community. I, for one, take umbrage at such suggestion. Obviously, it is being implied that I am partial, and this so-called anti-growth squad would like to point out that I, my family, and my affiliates, companies, and organizations are very civic and charitably minded. It is our way of life, and we would have it no other way. Working with the other precinct chairs leads me to think likewise of their concept in this regard. Proverbs 12:18. There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. As children of God, our tongues have a lot of power. Proverbs 18:21 confirms this by saying, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it is a source of cramps. To your good health for Tuesday. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 77-year-old female of Hispanic heritage. For many years, I have been on cholesterol medication. It has always bothered me, but in the past year, the night cramps in my legs have been intolerable. After I stopped taking them, all symptoms stopped as well. Recently, I went to the heart doctor and had cholesterol 450, triglycerides 778, HDL 45, and non-HDL cholesterol 405. I started taking rosuvastatin once I heard these blood test results. After about 3 days, I started experiencing the nighttime cramps in my calves. I have blocked arteries in my heart, and I also have an abdominal aneurysm. I know I am not going to live forever, but of all the issues I have, the cholesterol issue gives me the most worry. Any suggestions? Dr. Roach writes, because you have coronary artery disease, blockages in the arteries, and very high cholesterol, a statin drug is of very high value in reducing your risk of having a heart attack, which could be fatal. Your doctor should be doing everything possible to reduce the side effects of statins, which may also help slow progression of an abdominal aneurysm. Why not try a different statin drug? Although rosuvastatin works well for many, the newer drug, pitavastatin, is potent and has a lower risk of muscle aches. Fluvastatin and pravastatin also have lower risk of muscle aches. Readers may write Dr. Keith Roach at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Wife with illness gets little help from husband. Dear Abby, for Tuesday, October 27th. Dear Abby, I am a young woman who has battled rheumatoid arthritis and Sjögren's syndrome for the past 8 years. My aunt passed away from complications of it at the age of 43, and I'm getting close to that age. Since the beginning of the pandemic, I have become increasingly disabled. I can barely get out of bed without being in pain and cannot sleep. Household chores have become impossible, and I can get things done only near the end of the day when the swelling in my joints goes down. I saw how this disease robbed my aunt of her livelihood, but I also saw how my uncle helped her with almost everything. I love my husband, but he seems to think that I can just take a pill and instantly and magically be fine, which is not true. He has unrealistic expectations of me that I cannot meet. I have tried to get him to understand this is a chronic disease that will be with me for the rest of my life, and I have given him material to read, but he dismisses it. At this point, I feel like packing up and leaving because I'm a burden to him and I don't know what else to do anymore. Advice? Full of pain. Dear Full of Pain, packing up and leaving right now is not advisable. When couples promise each other they will stick together in sickness and in health, situations like the one in which you find yourself is what's meant. Does your doctor know the degree to which your health has declined in the last several months? If not, put the person on notice. Schedule a consultation, if possible, and when you do, your husband should be with you so he can fully understand what's going on and help you if you need it. If he isn't capable of doing that, you will have to make other arrangements for your care and for the housework you can no longer manage. Please stop beating yourself over this. You have done nothing wrong. Your husband could be just as easily be the unwell spouse, if fate hadn't decided otherwise. Dear Abby, my friend just ended a relationship with her boyfriend of over 2 years that had progressed to them moving in together. About 8 months ago, she found out he was having an online relationship, but they talked it out and decided to give it another try. Now, after learning he has another woman on the line, she kicked him out. Abby, he is working to get her back, and she seems to want to give him another chance. I think it's a losing game for her and more disappointment down the line. My question is, how honest should I be about my unwillingness to go along with giving him a third chance? It seems like this leopard won't change his spots. Crystal Ball in Missouri. Dear Crystal Ball, if you haven't already expressed your feelings to your friend and she asks for your opinion, be fully honest regarding your concerns about her ex-boyfriend's character. I agree that having cheated on her not once but twice, the likelihood of him doing it again is almost guaranteed. That said, you can't live your life's friend for her, and some people are slow to learn.
Jacqueline Bigger's Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars are the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Scorpio and a moon in Pisces. Happy birthday for Tuesday, October 27, 2020. Creative, dynamic, and impulsive, your emotions run hot and cold. This year, you're forcefully influential in your work and creatively successful. Channel your faith constructively, and 2021 is a positive year. If single, you need another's devotion, and you seek it out obsessively. If attached, your bond is very intense and passionate, and you need to listen carefully to what your partner tells you. Gemini helps you lighten up. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 3 stars. Others seem preoccupied. Leave them to it. It's not easy to share thoughts and plans today. Music or an art project can help you process what's going on. These will offer valuable insights and introduce you to fascinating groups. Tonight, a good night's sleep. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. A new talent is emerging. Hone your aptitudes. The mood lightens. You have more time for recreation than has been the case for a while. Your positive state of mind and enhanced mental energy open many avenues of opportunity. Tonight, celebrate with a friend. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 5 stars. It's a marvelous day to become organized and set new goals. Networking is rewarding, too. Implement creative ideas at work. Focus on balance and perspective. You are about to make genuine progress. Tonight, a childhood issue can be released. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 4 stars. Love has a mystical, spiritual quality. Physical activities bring out your best intellectual potentials today. Studying another language and culture can have a positive spiritual impact too. Discussion groups awaken your higher mind. Tonight, mixing cautiously, properly socially distanced with others. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 4 stars. Much energy will be poured into financial and security issues today, and it can make you impatient. Think before speaking. Gathering information is especially important. A hunch or dream contains a helpful message. Tonight, go where you've never gone before. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 3 stars. A relationship reaches a turning point. Others have valuable suggestions. Be kind and cooperative. Teamwork is the secret to success today. Expectations are important in relationships. Certain companions can be high maintenance. Tonight, a delicious dinner with a loved one. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 3 stars. be aware of new health needs and take time to release stress. Today also suggests links to animal companions. A nurturing and loving relationship with a pet is beneficial to your well-being. Spend more time with your pets today. Tonight, a soothing herbal bath. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 5 stars. Your romantic needs are going through an adjustment period. You find more brightness in a close bond. It is very healing after a sense of disappointment and denial for the past 2 years. Make sure you lighten a child's day today. Tonight, buy something beautiful. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. Today you'll be devoting great energy to family matters and home life. Plan a traditional cleaning in your home, then burn sage to usher in fresh energies and dispel all that is stale. Good manners and sincerity are a must. Tonight, family discussion meeting. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. You take care of transportation needs satisfactorily. Obstacles posed by communication gaps or ornery neighbors are easily overcome. Although you might not feel so, you're a bit of a superpower in organizing today. Tonight, catching up with a sibling or cousin on a deeper level. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Be cautious and do not go into debt today. A relationship solidifies. A practical mood prevails. An old wound of the heart begins to heal. Double-check directions and details connected to work. Something needs revision. Tonight, take the night off. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. Impressionistic, receptive, and intuitive, Pisces is the most imaginative of dreamers. Today, a greater sense of confidence in who you are develops. Business associates admire you, and the workplace becomes more pleasant. Tonight, a new cycle related to your happiness starts. Born today, poet Dylan Thomas, 1914, poet Sylvia Plath, 1932, comedian John Cleese, 1939.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.